Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. So Harry, Izzy, welcome to the podcast.
Yay.
Together. Harry, have you been feeling left out?
I've been very left out, yeah. I've been waiting for my invite, G, to the podcast.
You are the first. Oh no, Tom's done it. So it's okay, it's only out of you and Danny. I was going to say you're the first of the member, but that's a lie. And actually, Matt's been in, so even McBusted, you're the.
Yeah, but Matt's more interesting than me. So, and you know, what season are you on now?
Oh, you know what? This season is so long that we're almost out of seasons now. We're just rolling.
We're running out of guests as well.
No.
Scraping the barrel.
Yeah. We've become like an almost always on podcast, right, okay, which I really love.
Yeah.
And what's amazing now, because we've been doing it for 6 years, is that people sort of say to us, can I come on and do an app? And I'm like, yeah. Should Why not? Because your version of parenthood, your experiences of becoming pregnant or giving birth, whatever that is.
My experience of giving birth.
Not yours, but might just relate to someone who needs to hear it at that point.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I'm always up for saying yes to guests, but nice. Welcome.
Thank you.
I always start by going back to childhoods. Mm. What were your childhoods like, guys? Quite similar or different?
I think quite different. Well, they're definitely like crossovers. I think actually my childhood is quite different to most people's. Often I talk about my childhood to people and they're like, really? That's crazy, you know. I mean, ultimately, like, very happy childhood, very lucky, very privileged, you know, went to great school, you know, brother and sister, mum, dad, you know. Many people now know my mum and I spend most of my...
I love your mum. If there was a fan club for your mum, I think I'd be the chair. It's the only thing I would ever chair.
You chair, would you? Yeah, well, I spend a lot of my life now, you know, walking around thinking I'm getting recognised and people are recognising me to tell me that they love my mum. They're like, Harry, please say hi to your mum. I love your mum. I'm like, but it is amazing. And actually, yeah, as I said to her on the phone the other day, she deserves it. And I said, it's a testament to you as a person, mum. Mm. You should take all these compliments. A very happy childhood. I mean, I guess what's different from mine to most people's and a conversation that still happens now with my bandmates, you know, because it's crazy to them, the things that I did. I went to a boarding school when I was 8.
But, you know, so Lola is 7.
Yeah.
So I seeing her now kind of going, well, in a year's time.
Yeah.
Well, in January, you know, that's
in a
when
year's
she
time.
Turns 8.
Yeah, in a year's time, she would be. No, she'd be going to in September. Yeah, in the September, she'd
so
be going.
So now,
to,
seeing it as a point of view of seeing, looking at your child and going, "Oh my god."
Mm. Yeah. Well, it was very much as well back then, not always, but it was more predominantly boys that would go as
yeah.
well. But yeah, certainly couldn't imagine sending Lola. And for me, it was full boarding as well. So you'd go for 3 weeks at a time and then come home for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then you go back for another 3 weeks. And so, yeah, but it was kind of all I knew. I thought
yeah.
that was the reality of most kids. You're so sort of sheltered. You driven like an hour and a half away from home, up this sort of big driveway, this big house that Tom described as Hogwarts when mm-hmm. he saw it. And I remember that evening, it was the first time I saw my dad cry, actually, and my mum was crying, me and my brother were crying, and my dad started crying in the kitchen, and I then started laughing because I thought he was joking, because I'd never seen him cry before. And yeah, off we went. My sister was 12 mm-hmm. and she was at the sort of local school, and she may have been boarding by then, but anyway, yeah, off we went with our, you know, trunks and tuck boxes. And you went, I remember going through the big arch door with the headmaster, and you sort of turn around and your parents were gone. And I didn't realise what they would do back then is they'd say, you know, they'd say to your parents, go, you know, and...
God, that's one thing to do at 9 o'clock in the morning when you're going to see them at three. It's a different if it's going to be 3 weeks.
I know, and it's also September, so the evenings are dark. I remember it was dark, it's autumn time. You know, it was a Sunday night. And suddenly then you're in this dormitory with six other boys, I think it was, in these kind of like cast iron beds and like single pane rattling windows. And it's like, yeah, it's crazy, really. But it was my normal.
That was your normal?
Yeah.
Mm. What was yours like, Izzy?
So I'm the youngest of four. So I have...
And the eldest are all boys.
And I've got three older brothers.
Yeah.
So I just remember being quite chaotic and surrounded by music. My mum and dad had a music school, and our summers where we used to go off in the caravan, and they'd pitch up at a school and run these little music courses. And yeah, so music was heavily part. So much so, I remember just when somebody asked me what I was carrying, that I was like, it's a violin. It's just felt so normal. But then my brothers went away to they were choristers at King's, and I was at home. And it is that weird feeling of not having your siblings. And I often think about that sometimes we forget to explain to our children about something that's about to happen. And so, but in my eyes, they were there and then they were gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, Guy, the brother closest to me, we were really close. They used to call us like Darby and Joan, and we did everything together. And suddenly he was away at school. So, yeah, I remember the holidays. We would often, like, there was football in the garden, and we would just have loads of fun together, and it was kind of quite loud and chaotic and then very quiet when they went away.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, though, you say that, like, about could I imagine sending Lola to the boarding school? No, I couldn't, but could I imagine sending my boys? Certain times in the day.
You fantasise about it.
I fantasise about it. It sounds very appealing. Off you go. See you in 3 weeks.
Yeah, suddenly you understand why your mum
But that's what my mum says. She was like, you were so full on and you so demanding, and you just wanted to be doing everything constantly. And actually, she'd had a car accident and she just couldn't cope with me and my brother. So I was talking only the other day about it to someone, and I think some people perceive it as cruel, and gosh, you know, would you do that with your kids? And I think it very much depends on the child. You know, I think it really suits some people, and it suited
me.
Also,
you had an amazing time there.
Yeah, amazing
time. And actually, if I think about it, you are someone who has firm friendships, like your friendship groups, like back in the like early band days, it was your mates who were there the whole time, and they actually became a massive part of our lives. Like, you create a brotherhood solid way.
Yeah, you do. And it's, I think school in general, it's not necessarily for everyone.
Yeah.
I think people that struggle at boarding school probably struggle at a day school as well, potentially. But yeah, it's not for everyone, but I loved it. And as you said, great friendships and amazing opportunities and access to sport and music. And so, yeah, very lucky, I think, both of us with our child. Izzy was obviously surrounded by music and... Mm.
Can you two remember when you first started talking about the possibility of having children in the future together?
It's probably so early on, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, we were both quite like... I think I, you know, the thing with it. I was always quite like a romantic. I think I'd often be like let down by girls because they're like, he's a bit too like...
A bit full on,
yeah, a bit too. Like a couple of girls that I'm still friends with now are like, yeah, no, I liked you, but you were just like a bit like, it's like, chill out, mate. And with Izzy, I didn't, you know, we obviously like had a real connection and didn't feel like I had to be like that with her. And yeah, I think very early on we'd talk about kids.
Names
and kids, yeah. And way before we were like engaged and... you know, back in the days where we all lived, you know, opposite each other. And I even remember on, you know, Ducks Hill Road.
Yeah.
Having a conversation with you in the car about kids and names and things. So it was always something we projected, yeah.
Mm. It's funny though, isn't it? I think because you're like us, it actually took you a while to get married, start having, like, you know, go down that path. I think when you're younger, it always feels like, oh, that's a lovely thing that we're doing in the future.
Yeah.
But then when you're actually kind of going, no, we're gonna start now. Yeah. Even if it's a start, you know, just not try. You know, we're just gonna see what happens. That is a massive step.
Yeah, well, I think as well for us, you know, women in general, from my experience, are a lot more capable and mature than men. But because of being in McFly, you know, we essentially had jobs from the age of 17 and were lucky enough to, you know, get a property with a mortgage, mm-hmm. and suddenly you do have to grow up quite, not that we did, but you
absolutely,
no, you don't.
I don't
okay.
know where this is going from.
Okay, you have responsibility.
No, okay. I'll tell you what, in the band house, there was zero responsibility. Yeah, let's remember, like, the state that you used to leave it in all the whole time. I think
awful.
When you did buy your own places, actually, you in particular, you became, that was your home.
Yeah.
That was something that you had worked hard to get, and therefore you treated it with respect. And I think that is where the responsibility came in.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, and also because you met Tom when you were 13 and we met when I was 19, you were 21.
Just a bit older.
A couple years older. But it was like almost an inconvenience that we met each other at a young age because we were so well suited and fell in love, just like you and Tom. And it's like, it was amazing. But then you're like, oh, wow, I'm only 21. Suddenly I'm 22. And it's, Izzy was talking about like, when are we moving in together and stuff? And it's like, oh, wow. But we got married. I was 22 days before I was 27. You guys were young. And so we were the first kind of weddings of all our friends and stuff. So, yeah.
Big step.
But it worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out.
It did work out.
Didn't it?
It worked out. We're still here.
The last time you were on, Izzy, which was 6 years ago, which blows my mind. You know, like I said before, we had three kids when we last recorded that. We've now got six between us.
Yeah.
That is quite, you know, quite the shift, I would say, in terms of going out for dinner or anything. We talked about IVF, miscarriage, and actually, I've got to say, if you go back and listen to those episodes, because actually that episode is so beautiful, your outlook on it. And at the time, you just published Dare to Dream as well.
Uh-huh.
And I think in terms of looking for places that talk about IVF and fertility issues with hope, I think that is an amazing resource, and your podcast as well, which you did at the time, which was absolutely amazing. Where we left you, you were very pregnant with Kit.
Yes.
I think you were literally like weeks away from giving birth.
Probably, yeah, because the book came out in the summer and he was born at the end of summer. He was born early, so yeah.
Can you remember going towards the birth of number two?
So
there was a lot of huffing.
Was there a lot of
huffing?
Summer. It's a summer pregnancy.
It was hot.
Very different, because Lola was born obviously in January.
In January, yeah.
It's very different, I think, a winter and a summer pregnancy.
And Kit was early, and I could feel, I felt heavier. And you know, it's harder when you've got a toddler, you know, that you need to be looking after. You can't just go, oh, I'm off for a rest. So Kit arrived. He was probably my most straightforward birth. He kind of flew out, which sort of explains him generally. And you think, oh, okay, well, I've got one and I know what I'm doing and this will be fine. And then you have another baby and they're completely different. And you'll think, actually, I'm not fine. This is what's going on. And it was intense, like having two under two.
Yeah.
And very different characters.
Yeah.
Completely opposite. I don't know why I thought they would be the same. But you kind of had this preconceived idea that, okay, that worked for one. Like Lola, I used to just wrap up a bag of toys, you know, in those kind of bags that you can gather your toys in. And I just put it out and she'd just sit on the mat and play with her toys. I thought it was just perfectly normal. Whereas then our kid, and it was like, oh, this isn't, you know, this is not how he's going to play. Yeah. It took me really long time to adjust.
Can you remember how you felt going from one to two? Was there a feeling of, oh, I've got my routine down with the one, I know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And did any apprehension sort of come in? Because obviously you know, we all feel very lucky to have the children that we do. You know, we've all gone through a lot of things to get there. But I think there's those certain natural things that might come into play alongside that.
Yeah. And I say this just with the disclaimer that I love my children with every part of my being.
Yeah, but we're here to complain and moan about our children.
Feel free.
I did reach moments where I just felt just someone taken, not forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just someone taken for the afternoon. I cannot do this. He was just, he was so pretty, Git. He looked so lovely as a baby. And he was just this gorgeous little boy, but he just whinged all the time. And Lola was kind of, you know, wanting my attention, and I couldn't give her the attention that I was used to giving. And it was just so intense. And I definitely found the transition from one to two harder than two to three.
Really?
I don't know where you.
Well, I think the fact is, as well, like, let's not be around the bush here. Like, Lola was just an easy baby.
Can I just say, I know I've said this to you before, but I can remember clearly, because there's 3 weeks between Lola and Buddy.
Yeah.
And I can remember clearly us two breastfeeding in my room, us both sat on the bed.
Yeah.
And at one point you went, oh no, oh no, she's having a meltdown. She's having a meltdown. And she was literally going, that was it. And I was like, oh my God, wait till Buddy starts. Because he's like, his mouth is open. It's like a trumpet coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, you were spoiled with
so
Lola's
spoiled
meltdowns.
And I was literally like, why is everyone complaining about having kids? This is easy. I was like, this is just, I was just so completely.
And also
utterly,
that feeling of, I know what I'm doing. I'm getting this right.
Yeah. And I was so like, annoyingly obsessed with her. I thought she was literally the perfect child. And she was just a joy. And that's why I think we just like, oh, let's have another one. And so there's not a big gap, you know.
Yeah.
And then Kit came along and it was like, oh, okay, I get it now. Like, this is what it's really like.
I think as well, I look back to being a mum to Lola when she was first born, and I didn't allow myself to enjoy it.
Really?
I found the first year I felt so stuck in the trenches. I looking back now, I often think I could have, you know, I could have enjoyed her a bit more, but I was struggling so much with the transition of going from, you know, me to mother.
Yeah.
And I always liken it to that, you know, that bird, the duck, sorry, that's going along and I'm madly like paddling underneath. And it really felt like that with her. I remember just being so what I would take every bit of advice that came from everywhere and, you know, finally, you know, look into every single detail and worrying about, was she too hot? Was she too cold?
Yeah.
Weaning stressed me out. Like, even just thinking about what equipment I needed, like, just so much stuff. And now I realise with Lockie, I just don't worry.
No, but then
I think you say,
with
Lockie, I just don't care.
You know? That is that typical third thing, isn't it? You're just kind of like, oh, they're here somewhere. You know what I mean? Mm. It's a very different.
The amount of times we've been in the house going, where's Lockie? And he's like at the top floor on his own. It's ridiculous.
I do feel like Lockie, I have been able for the first time to enjoy.
I felt like that with Max. I did feel like that. You said something amazing, actually, the last time you were on Izzy, which was something like in the night times or whenever you want to, whenever you feel like you aren't quite sure in a situation, don't go to Google. Just wait.
Yes.
And wait for your mother instincts or your, you know, to kind of kick in and tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we are so used to kind of getting different bits.
Mother's instinct is so strong. I think the strongest moment I have had probably more recently was when Kit started school. He was born August 26th.
Yeah.
And I really, really strongly felt he wasn't ready and I wanted to hold him back a year. But we didn't, because everybody is saying, no, keep him in the year, keeping good, you know. And that might be fine for another August 26th baby. But as a mum, I was like, I just don't think he's ready.
Mm.
But I didn't react. I didn't listen to my instincts. And yeah. But sure enough, we have now put him back a year, and it's the best decision we've made. But it is that constant reminder to trust yeah. your instinct. And
well, it's knowing what your instinct versus anxiety yeah, and irrational thoughts. So it's yeah. trying to, you know, figure out which one's speaking, your gut or your anxiety.
Mm. Yeah, very true. Let's go back to the births. Because you said they were very varied.
Yeah.
Let's go 1, 2, 3, shall we? Because I don't think we've ever even heard your Lola birth story.
No.
And Harry, you can pipe in on your stance on the 1, 2, 3.
On my thoughts?
Yeah. How did it go for you?
So Lola was late. She was 10 days. I was overdue. And that's awful, isn't it? Because every single day you are just willing. You want to just have your baby.
Did you have endless people messaging you as well?
I did. And all the NCT group were having their babies. And anyway.
Lovely. Yeah, the lovely NCT group we had. But one of them, I don't think, quite realised the impact she had because she was the first to give birth. She sent quite a fateful text message to the NCT girls group, didn't she?
I can't remember.
Do you not remember? She went... Oh, she gave birth first. She was like, oh, my God, girls, it's awful. Oh,
yes,
my God, it's the worst thing ever. And Izzy was like...
I do remember.
What? Why would she send that message?
Oh, my God.
She was like, it was awful. It was hell. It was the worst thing ever. Oh, my God, it was the worst pain I've experienced. It was... And I was like, oh, my God. And Izzy read it and was like, look, look.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I was quite anxious, yeah. as you can imagine.
And that didn't help things.
No,
but
the birth was... long,
right?
And Lola got stuck, but I had an epidural and all was well eventually. And
you boshed out a fair few hours of labor, yeah.
Yeah, I did. And then I reached that moment of
you went into the bathroom, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you were having a bit of a panic,
yeah.
And you were, I remember you was like, I don't think I can do this. And you were very tearful, and
which I think is actually a stage of labor,
yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The transition, but I felt I needed some help at that.
Were you mindful about your anxiety going into labour?
Yeah, so when I found out I was pregnant with Lola, I remember having this conversation with my mum just saying, and Harry, I'm going to have an elective C-section because I am too terrified. I'm so anxious.
Yeah.
And my mum... who's obviously had four and has never really spoken in the best way about giving birth.
Right.
To put it mildly.
Was it I bit the midwife or something?
Yeah, she bit the midwife of one of them. But she then said to me, oh no, it's wonderful. I was like, all these years, you know, but I needed to hear that from my mum. And... yeah, so I kind of worked through that anxiety and I looked at all options and I kind of worked through it. And but I did have Lola and she was born with her arm up like that.
Oh.
And got a bit stuck and it was about 2 hours trying to get her out. And when she came out, she did not look anything like I thought she would look at all. And we often talk about this because I was like, ooh. Like, obviously.
I know, right?
So obviously I love, but I was just like...
What?
So, well, I remember being pregnant first time around and the midwife saying, the first 24 hours, your baby is not going to look like what they think.
Yeah.
What you think they are going to.
Yeah. But I thought she was the most beautiful, perfect thing you've ever
which
seen.
Which is weird, right? That I was... Obviously, she was my daughter and I didn't know I was going to have a girl. And
yeah.
Obviously, but I think in my head I had pictured something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And she just didn't really resemble.
Well, she came out and they passed her to Izzy and Izzy went, oh, it's a boy. And I was like, that's an umbilical cord.
That's a girl.
I was like, it's actually a girl.
And you're right. And then she, you know, she grew and, yeah, bless her. And that it's the mix of the gene pools as well.
Izzy worryingly was like... She looks like Thomas, my brother. And I was like, yes, what were you trying to say? Like...
We had IVF, so there was absolutely...
I didn't need confirmation, Izzy.
anyway, moving on.
He He was the first to meet her.
Also, I love the fact that he looks like Thomas. Well, yes, he's her uncle. Yeah. What the wow.
Wow, what's going on here?
Been found out.
Yeah.
Kit. Moving on.
But can I just say, because G asked for my experience.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So for my experience was like I was the support team for someone doing an ultra marathon or
really?
Something. Yeah, because I was there and, or maybe, yeah, an ultra marathon like on all fours, because that's the sort of position you're in, well, you were in. I don't know if that's like a standard thing. I think it is.
I think you just do whatever your body tells you to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, well, because in the movies, obviously, they're on their back and they're looking great. Mm. It's like, oh, God, yeah, oh, there we go. But it's not like that. So there's a lot of, you know, dabbing at the forehead with the flannel.
Did she ever bat you away?
No. Oh. There was lots of squeezing of my hand, lots of motivational chat from me. TENS machine. Mm-hmm. Was turned up and ramped right up during the contractions.
Really found that helpful, actually, the TENS.
I had it in my bag. Yeah. I never got a chance to get it out.
Yeah.
You're the birthing hero, though, G, let's be honest.
Yeah, paracetamol, that'll do.
You'll be fine. You sat at a meal table with us.
Like, I know, but I can remember talking about blow-dried hair in the movies. I can remember thinking on the way to the hospital, oh, my hair's going to be blow-dried. It did not look like that afterwards.
And for me, and it's not necessarily like this for everyone, but you'll eventually have this moment, but it was the, I think also because I was tired. I was exhausted. You know, I'd been through a lot that evening. No, I was just tired, okay? You started going to labour in the middle of the night and it was obviously a long, exhausting kind of day and you'd eventually gave birth at what?
It's about 8 the following evening.
Yeah, 8 the following evening. And I was just, I'd never cried so much. Like the feeling of euphoria was just like so overwhelming. It was literally like the sort of physical reaction was like the most amazing feeling I've ever had. So
I do sometimes wonder as well whether subconsciously we had gone through a lot to conceive Lola and we'd had a miscarriage. Mm. I wonder whether there was that release as well. She was finally here.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, and just for me as well, for just to know we'd got through the birth and she was there. And
if I talk, you know how you can tap into feelings sometimes by talking about it? If I ever talk about the moment in like real depth, I find myself like welling up, like and I think I always will. It was such a special moment. And
also in the lead up to meeting Lola, you would have seen Izzy go through something that you've never witnessed her go through before. You know, I think when you're watching, I mean, I never watched, so but I imagine it's a very animalistic thing to do, give birth.
I knew that was coming. I sounded like a car that was being revved up, my contractions. Would you say that?
I've never heard you say that. It was fascinating. No, that was it. Wait. It was like a car. That was it. I was like...
You can't control it, though.
She gets really...
No, you have no control.
Is that inappropriate? Izzy always gets annoyed with me if we're like at a dinner party or something. She's like, you can't do that. I'm like...
Harry, I'm so
used to
doing things
like that.
But also,
I think those sounds, that is you kind of taking control. Do you know what I mean? So it's out of your control, but it's your body.
Yeah.
But I tell you what was funny. When Izzy went into labour with Kit, we got in the car. So my mum was there with Lola.
Yeah.
We got in the car and we were driving along. And then suddenly she went, oh. I was like, oh, I remember this.
And we had a laugh, didn't we?
We had a laugh.
We had a laugh about it.
Well, yeah. And Izzy was doing it and laughing. She's going, oh, stop it.
Yeah. But Kit, I mean, like, he was there very quickly.
Was he early or late?
He was early, 10 days early, and it was just very quick and simple, really.
Really?
I mean, I had an epidural. I knew that was what I was going to do. And, yeah, it was my kind of easiest birth. But I remember with both of Lola and Kit, like, the first night, I do wonder whether that first night sets a precedent. But
right, what happened?
I put Lola down
and
she slept. Kit did not sleep.
Right.
And again, I was like, why are you not? You should be exhausted by what's just happened.
Yeah.
And it was like that, right. So that's not how this is going to go. And, you know, you suddenly, you're adapting and you have no time to recharge. You're straight in it after labour. And I remember just being with Kit immediately after the birth, feeling so exhausted. I couldn't keep my eyes open.
Yeah, it was a lot less kind of intense than Lola's, but you were so tired. I've got photos of you, you holding him and you're like just falling asleep.
Yeah.
But also by that point, Lola would have only been a year and a half.
Yeah, 19 months.
Yeah.
So you'd have been running around after a toddler.
Yeah.
It's not like you can, I'm going to say rest, but you can't look after yourself in the same way that you can when it's your first pregnancy.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
So. I don't know. What were your boys like their first nights? Can you remember?
Everyone slept. Really? So, and Max, we all were conked out to the point where in the morning I was like, is he still here?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because Lola, she slept and I found it really difficult to sleep. First of all, I really missed having her in like me, and it was like, I know she's safe there, and I didn't want to put her on me because I didn't want to fall asleep, and then but I didn't want her there, and I just remember not sleeping particularly well, whereas with Kit I was desperate to sleep and he was just not having any of it.
You see little parts of their personality looking back as within the first couple of months that you can still relate to now as a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old, you know.
And at night, when we go and check on them, and they might be pulling an expression where you can still see that little baby face.
Yes, it's amazing. Yeah. And they do something and think, oh my God, that reminded me of when he was like 6 months.
Yeah.
How did it feel going into the second birth, having experienced the first? Because I think first you kind of go into with no knowledge of what it might be like.
Yeah. I think with all my pregnancies, I've always felt nervous that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So just trying to get to the point of having them. Probably with Kit, I knew what was coming. What I found difficult with it though was Lola, being away from Lola and not knowing when it was going to happen. We didn't have family that lived nearby, so the practical sense I couldn't control. And I found that difficult. I was more sort of apprehensive about who was going to take care of her actually. But your mum happened to be there,
we planned it, didn't we?
No, because he was really early, but she had been up staying that weekend. And bless her, when I came back, she changed the sheets because my water broke. Changed the sheets, she filled the fridge, she made meals in the freezer.
Yeah, she was born to, my mum is...
she's a nurturer.
She's a nurturer. She's a nurse. She's an amazing mum. And now she's just like your quintessential granny. She's just so caring and lovely. So
I was very lucky. And I have such a close relationship with your mum. But there is also that something about your mum walking through the door.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum turning up and just feeling, thank you, mum's here. for me, probably.
Yeah. You know.
And then Lockie.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's talk about Lockie. Because baby number 3, it's always a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously having had IVF with Lola, then falling pregnant naturally with Kit, you have one embryo in the freezer.
Yeah.
So that was always a thing looming on the horizon. If you would have more, if you would go down that route, like what you would do.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have sex again though, so I was quite keen not to. Is he like, I was like, oh, come on.
Cat.
Sorry. No, I think what's interesting, though, is after Lola, it's almost like your fertility system. What's the word? Sorry.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think it has different effects on different bodies. So secondary infertility is a massive thing for some women. Whereas you hear a lot of women struggling first time round and then after that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. This is not based on any scientific knowledge, but it was almost like after Lola, it sort of kickstarted everything. And then you were fertile and we tried for 1 month and it was like, I remember on New Year's Day, it was like, I'm pregnant. And I was like, oh, that was easy. But then after Kit was born.
Also, I just found the whole irony of that. Like, having gone through what we went through and then being able to wake Harry up on New Year's Day and tell him. Yeah. I was just like, what? How is that? You know, going from that desperation to just suddenly being like, I'm pregnant. And I was so grateful to have that opportunity to share that moment with Harry.
Yeah.
But then after Kit was born, everything went all over the place again, and you didn't have a cycle for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until Izzy had finally broken me down to the point where I gave in and said, okay, let's have a third, 3.5 years later, that you were like, well, this, you know, I need to look into this because why am I now in this same state that I was in pre-Lola? And that was, well, for me, and I think you've talked about it before, a really interesting situation. So you weren't having your cycle, you hadn't had a period for 3 years, right?
Yeah.
And you can interrupt
and tell
this story properly, but I find it fascinating how she'd take the kids to nursery a couple of days a week, and every day you'd have the same routine, walk back and go to the same coffee shop and come home. And this one day she was feeling very low about the situation of why is this happening to me again, and I think just life was getting to you a bit about, I can't remember, there's other things going on. And for some reason, you went to a different coffee shop that day for the first time ever. And somebody in the queue went up to Izzy and just said, oh, I just wanted to say I really have enjoyed your book or your podcast about fertility. And Izzy was just like, oh, well, thanks so much. I really needed to hear that today. Yeah. And then you got talking about it and you, for some reason, sort of connected with this lady and you sort of started telling her about, well, actually, I'm in this situation now, or I want to try for a third.
Actually, no, she was explaining her situation.
Right.
And as she was talking, I was going, that's me, that's me, that's me.
And her situation was?
So basically, after Kit was born, I lost a lot of weight, but with no real explanation. Mm-hmm. And I think having been on, like, hormone treatment and having felt really uncomfortable in my body and just so far from myself. You know, you lose weight and people comment and then it feels good. And there was a bit of that. And then also the stress I felt I was under with two under two, but also with, trying to fit in work and everything. And I just became very controlling over my food and exercise. So I was training every day. I was under eating and the anxiety was bubbling. And there is a condition called hypothalamic amenorrhea. And basically, this is what the person in the queue was explaining to me. And I'd never heard anything about it before. And she said, go and get Nicola Rinaldi's No Period Now What?
The book.
Thank you. And so I went straight up to the bookshop, bought it, and did not put it down. It was just me completely about what was going on. And I sort of started to think maybe this is what was going on before Lola.
Right.
And everything I was doing to try and treat what I thought was polycystic ovaries was actually aggravating the hypothalamic amenorrhea. So I read the book. And there was a treatment plan, which was basically eating more, no exercise, and looking at your adrenals and your stress levels. So I basically just ate more, which was hard because I had got myself into a pretty dark place with that.
Yeah. Your relationship with food was at a low point. But I think, as you said, you know, after Kit, because you, for a reason that was never explained, you lost loads of weight. And we were constantly hearing this for 2 years of, oh my God, Izzy, you look amazing. Like, how have you done that? How have you lost all this weight?
And then two babies.
Oh my God. And then she was going to the gym and I remember the food you'd eat and you were so controlling over it. And I didn't recognise it as a problem, but it was very kind of addictive, that feeling,
right?
It wasn't
about the aesthetics. It was about only putting good in my body and only being healthy and only being good. And
I can't eat this.
I can't eat that. Yeah. So it wasn't about I need to be this size or it was nothing to do with that. It was all to do with has something unhealthy gone in my body. Right. And I wonder whether, you know, there was a little bit of a feeling that my body had failed when it came to fertility. And there was a lot of talk on nutrition and what I needed to do to treat polycystic ovaries that just kind of affirmed a feeling of my body's not working how it should be.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether there was a little bit of that going on that, you know, I'd lost confidence in myself and this was something I had control over and probably feeds into the anxiety as well. And it just got so bad to a point where the moment I knew that something was wrong was when it was Lola's birthday and I couldn't eat the cake. And just that feeling, and I had reduced, I wouldn't go out for meals with friends because I didn't know what was going to be on the menu.
Yeah.
Like,
we'd go back to my parents and you couldn't eat the food that was kind of presented and you'd bring your own food. And looking back, it was like, wow, actually.
It's funny. Because
and what would your reason be? So for everyone not to question that, what would your reason be for bringing your own food?
Because I could control, I knew what I was going to eat and I knew everything that was going in. I mean, it was so, I would get to the end of the day and I'd think through the day, what I had, was it okay? And if I felt it wasn't, I'd have to exercise.
Yeah.
Just really, I mean, I look back on it and I understand, but it's also one of the most, I feel quite ashamed talking about it.
I wouldn't at all. And I also think that at a time, at a period in your life where I think motherhood throws life into chaos. Mm. There is no control. And actually, I think you found an area that you were able to take complete ownership of and you know.
Yeah.
Also, I think as well, it was kind of, you remember the birth of Instagram was suddenly you had all this information at your fingertips.
When clean living was a
thing. And clean living and, you know, toxic free stuff and what's the word where people like detox, sorry, is the word I'm looking for. Detox tea, detox that and you know, being healthy. And it was just constantly this constant rhetoric around being healthy and what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat. And I think I've seen a lot of people, you know, the times you have talk about it, relate to it. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to how we want to now influence our children with health and fitness and exercise. Yeah. It's all about, it's a cliche thing to say, but it's all about balance, you know. And
I think also that's, you know, when I started to change my habits, which was really difficult, and that also meant having to open up and say I've got this problem, because you don't want to, because you don't want to go from it, you want to stay in it because that's where it feels safe, but you know you've got to. My drive was because I wanted to get pregnant. And so I followed this plan from the book. And a month later, my period starts. It was unbelievable.
Well, there was you thinking, I need to do yoga and this, and I need to only eat greens, and I can't eat this, no gluten, no. But that was the thing that was actually
exasperating the problem.
The problem, yeah.
And about 4 months later, fell pregnant with Lockie. And that was also a slightly tricky one for me because we had a frozen embryo. But at the time, my lovely clinic at Hearts in Essex, they advised us to try naturally before, because,
you're putting your body through a lot.
You're putting your body through a lot. Also, it was off the back of COVID. Not that they said this, but I felt there were so many people on a waiting list who haven't had a baby and had rounds cancelled, just, you know, terrible. And I kind of felt like I've got my two and if we can do this naturally, let's try and go down this path and then conceive Lockie, have many months later, 3-4 months later. But Lockie is my, like, I feel he is the result of a really difficult challenge. Like, it's funny to think, obviously I went through IVF with Lola, which is obviously challenging, but with Lockie in its own sense, it's sort of, he's my reminder.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one, the reason why I won't slip back, you know, because he is the result of me changing my lifestyle.
But you now changed the way your relationship with food and the way you exercise. And I found it amazing that stopping exercise, eating three solid meals a day, and then literally ovulating the next month.
Yeah.
And you sort of keep that positive relationship going with food and exercise. And it's something that we then can hopefully help Lola with, or it might be with the boys. We'll see.
But it's that overload of information, isn't it? And we're fed something for, you know, en masse. And we think that's the right thing to do.
You kind of see it now, I think, with a lot of like the fitness influencers, looking at themselves as Instagrammers back in 2014 and going, that I was not happy then and I'm happy now.
But that's the irony of you thinking you're healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, but actually it's one of the most unhealthy times in my life.
I see you now, like when we're around food and stuff, and I see you sort of go, yeah, no, I'll have a bit of that cake, you know.
Because
you
want enjoyment of back.
Yeah.
And you want also, I think your relationship with food was quite sculpted by how, you know, you grew up as well. And we think we want, you know, our children to see a kind of healthy relationship with food. And
like I've spoken to my mum about that. It was definitely like generational, where they just, it was a different diet every week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the language I grew up around food was diet.
Yeah. I have to restrict myself. I'm not allowed to have that stuff.
So that's why now, in, you know, with our kids, it's that talking about food in the most positive and getting enjoyment from it.
Yeah.
You know.
Just because of time, I would like you to give me a very quick lowdown on birth number three. I was told going into my third birth, it was going to be Trixie.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Because
apparently there's more space. Your body's like, oh, look at this. Oh. And I think hearing that was the most unhelpful thing. Because also I stopped breathing. So that wasn't good for someone who's hypnobirthing.
Lockie, so I had a planned induction with Lockie. And it was all kind of going to plan. But I reached this moment of, it was a real out-of-body experience. It was like nothing. I hadn't experienced it with the other two. And
Was it an anxiety thing? Or was felt like you were sort of
looking down on myself, it was.
I remember you were totally overwhelmed, weren't
you? Totally overwhelmed. Anyway, I said to the midwife, we did know he was a boy. I think he's coming. And she said, I think it's a bit too soon. And then my waters broke. And then she was like, oh, you're 10 centimetres. So I think it was just a really intense, quick, extreme.
Went from like 1 to 10, didn't it? Suddenly.
You were like settling down with...
I just put over my iPad. I was about to watch something. I was like, it's the third time we've done this.
I've got loads of pictures of Tom in the third labour, just asleep. Yeah. Behind me. Just like, yeah.
Anyway, he was back to back.
Right.
So it took the time to get him out as well. And then he was born facing the world.
Oh.
And he looked just like Lola. Pretty much.
Which you were prepared for this time.
Yeah.
Uncle Thomas is fine if he's in the room.
Thomas has two of mine. I'm father to Kit.
Guys, if you could write a letter on being a parent, who would it be to and what would you say?
I think I'd write a letter to my mum. And I would say that you were perfect. You were like the perfect mother. And because I think my mum, as we've grown up, you know, and I hope my brother and sister don't mind me saying this, we've all had our challenges, as most people do in life. And the first thing she does when one of us is going through something difficult in life is she blames herself. And she will just say, what have I done wrong? I'm so sorry, I should have, you know. And I'm forever, my brother and sister, I'll take, mum, it's not you, it's just life is hard and you were perfect. Like, you couldn't have done anything else. And I think that probably relates to what you experienced as or still experiencing as a mum, and maybe what Lola might one day. You're just doing the best you can. You did the best you ever could, and I couldn't have asked for more, I think.
Funny, isn't it? Because I think no matter how old your kids are, that that mothering guilt is always going to be there.
Yeah. So she, So don't blame yourself.
We love you, Emma.
We love you, Mum.
Don't know how to follow that, Harry.
Go on.
Yeah. I think I would have to write a letter to my mum too. I think mum has had to go through too much, and I think having gone through everything that happened with my brother, and to still get up every day and live her life without all the without thinking about the impact that it's not only just had on her and Rupert, but all of us. And I just, I want her to know that she did everything she could. And I have so much admiration and so much love for her. And I don't want her to ever feel that life has been different because of what happened. You've still felt her love and just I just have ridiculous amount of admiration for her strength.
I wonder if, because obviously with everything that happened with Rupert, you relate to it as a sister. And I wonder how having your own children has made, well, I think we always say when we become parents, you know, it makes us look at our own parents differently. But how it makes you look at that.
Yeah. And I think my kit triggers a lot in me with Rupert. Their character is very similar. And so I think I have a fear. And actually it's something which, it was amazing when you were saying about, you know, being a sister or a parent. Your mum wouldn't mind me saying, would she? Emma's lost her brother in a car accident. And so we always shared this understanding of that grief. Obviously, Rupert's still here, but we've lost the person he was. And I remember trying to say to her, there's just something about Kit, which is, and she just said, I know exactly what you're saying. I felt it with Thomas. and yeah, since becoming a mother, you just think it's just unimaginable to think of what they went through.
Yeah.
To have a knock at the door and the police to be standing there and your worst nightmares. And then that same day being asked if you want to turn off the life support. It's just, you know, how in an instant your life changes.
Yeah.
And everybody, and it's the knock-on effect, and it's not just in that moment, it's the years that follow.
Well, when we talk about mum guilt, you know, and in that moment having to make decisions for that son, for your other sons, for your daughter, for your family, and having to function, and you know, the weight of that to carry that and to keep moving forward, you just can't imagine it.
No, exactly. And you know, I think by having my children, I've always wanted that to give my parents, you know, the new generation and something to, you know, look forward to and watch and be able to come and babysit, but then leave them with
just
us when they leave.
Yeah, exactly. If they had tantrums, it's on us.
Yeah.
We finished the podcast with you completing three sentences. The first one is being a mum or being a dad means.
Being a dad means trying to help my children not make the mistakes I made. I often think I went through that and that was really horrible. Yeah. And I'm going to do everything I can to try and make sure my kids don't make the same mistake I made. But I guess another version of that would be it means everything. I love my kids. Like every morning coming down and seeing them and
seeing the mess they've made at breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, don't be wrong, about an hour later, I want them out the house and out my way. But yeah, it means everything.
Being a mum means.
So being a mum means letting go. Mm. Learning to let go all the time. Whether it's like that first nursery drop.
Yeah.
I mean, you're constantly hit with these milestones of having to let go of the one before.
Yeah.
And that's been a big lesson.
I think actually, sorry, because Izzy did so well there. I just want to say that for me, actually, being a dad means learning new levels of patience or trying to learn new levels of patience.
Yeah.
And that's a constant challenge for me just because of the way I am.
Yeah.
So, and Izzy helps me with that. And that's something that I think helps me to be a better dad and something that I constantly fail at, but try to be better at. So.
Next sentence. Since having children,
I find it really hard to remember who I was before.
Yeah. Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Since having children, I've bored a hell of a lot of people by talking about my children and showing them pictures of my children.
And did you think you would do that before you had kids? Or did you think, oh God, I'm not going to be one of those people?
I probably thought that, but yeah. Oh my God. And now it's even worse. Your phone, you can have that setting where you just tap it and there's loads of different photos. So I'm like, oh, there's Kit. Oh, it's a lucky dip. You don't know which kid you're going to get. Oh, that's lucky. Isn't he cute? He's my third. And it's really sweet. And that's like, oh, Lola, bless her.
I love it. Okay. Final sentence. I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I'm lying in bed and Izzy brings me a cup of tea. Izzy brings me a cup of tea in the morning. I'm the luckiest man alive.
You are.
I'm asleep. And do you know what? Not only do I get a cup of tea, Izzy walks up and goes, she puts her hand on my shoulder and I wake up and then I hear the noise of the tea.
Oh.
And she says, morning, sweetie. And I said, morning, Izzy. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, thank you. I love you so much. Thank you. And I have my cup of tea. And then the children come in. I'm like, go away. I just want to enjoy my cup of tea. And then I'll come.
Okay. I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I'm with my family. Curled up on the sofa, watching a film. No one needs anything, wants anything. And we can just curl up and be together.
That lasts for probably, if you're lucky, about a minute.
Yeah, so I'll take it.
Someone wants a drink. The cat starts meowing.
Someone's the cat. I love the cat, but come on. Guys, thank you so much. I've absolutely loved chatting. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
A pleasure.